Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. If you are not reading actively Brent Newhall's Geek Archaeology blog, then you're missing out, and I encourage you to go to geekarchaeology.com. That's G-E-E-K-A-R-C-H-A-E-O-L-O-G-Y. I know that's actually a really strangely difficult thing to remember how to spell off the cuff, so that's how you spell it now. It's geekarchaeology.com/blog. So if you go there, then and you can subscribe to the RSS feed, or actually specifically the Atom feed, which I should probably give you that address as well, because it's a little bit difficult to find if I recall correctly. So it's geekarchaeology.com/Atom. So that's a dot and then A-T-O-M. That's the feed address. Took me a while to find that. I don't actually even remember how I found it. But there you go. That's what it is. Subscribe to that, and you can get all kinds of very cool gaming ideas in your RSS reader every week. And pretty much every week, Brent, who I interviewed, by the way, if you've not heard that interview, then you should check that out on this show. It is episode 32. 032 is an interview with Brent Newhall. Pretty much every week he comes out with a Monster Monday and a Faction Friday. I think Faction Friday's kind of over. That's the feel that I'm getting. Could be wrong, but haven't seen one in a while. But Monster Monday continues, and it's really great. Lots of cool monsters coming out all the time. And frankly, it was difficult for me to decide what to cover. But I think the story ideas, at least for me, often are in the people rather than the monsters. I mean, that's not always true. The monsters are great, and a lot of times a monster will inspire some kind of adventure, but it typically surrounds an encounter around that monster, not the story itself. It's just, I want to include this monster in the adventure or in the story or whatever. So it's a little bit more direct to the point, I think, to have a faction involved, because that's where the people are, and that's kind of what drives the story usually. So I'm going to cover two factions that Brent came out with a couple of months ago for both of these. One is called the Invisible Hand, and the other is called the Black Blade. We'll start with the Invisible Hand, which is a faction inspired by the subclass of Rogue Mastermind, which Brent writes suggests a small secret organization. So he says on his blog, "There are rumors of a strange cabal that meets outside the city. They all wear metal masks, and they work to gain control of everything. One might be blackmailing half the cloth merchants, another might be the most successful goldsmith in the city, while another might be a judge. Those who whisper about this cabal call them the Invisible Hand. If you meet a member of the Hand on a back road as they travel to or from their meetings, they are always accompanied by two bodyguards each, one of whom specializes in melee combat and another in ranged. The masked master will stay back while its minions slaughter anyone who witnesses them. What if the minions fail? None can say it's never happened. But then how do people even know about the Invisible Hand?" And indeed, that would be the natural question, to which there's really no answer. This is a faction that encourages conspiracy theories. This is something that benefits the more there's a question about it's even about whether it even exists. And possibly, if it doesn't exist, maybe some other organizations that may as well be the Invisible Hand could benefit from these wild legends about this Invisible Hand faction, when actually it's been this other faction all along, and how convenient it is and how nice it is that the factions are, you know, this fake faction is getting all the attention while this other one creeps around in the shadows doing things that in the end get attributed to the invisible hand. So I think that right there is a great one. I think that would be a really intriguing mystery for people to have to ponder, whether it's in a story or a game that you're playing. There's this invisible hand rumor, and it comes up every now and again. Is it real? Is it not real? Is someone else benefiting from the distraction, or is someone benefiting from the instant notoriety by claiming to be the invisible hand? That's kind of often intrigued me, is the idea that you can, if there's an entity, real or imagined, that gets invented by Zeitgeist, then people can benefit, in theory, from that Zeitgeist by conveniently assuming the name of this entity. Who's going to check? It's not like there's an ID card for this sort of thing. It's just free notoriety, I guess. It's kind of interesting. And depending on what your goals are, the actual notoriety may or may not matter to you. And that is an important thing to keep in mind. Some people wouldn't want to assume the name of a fake entity because they want the credit themselves, and they feel like if they attribute it to the, quote, invisible hand, unquote, then they don't feel like they're getting that notoriety or that recognition themselves. That's kind of the prideful sort of criminal or whatever who just has to get that recognition. I think the smarter ones probably don't care who gets the thing gets attributed to, as long as the thing happens and as long as they meet their goal. But that's not always how the human brain works. So, of course, as with pretty much any faction, you could play it as a friendly faction, you could play it as an enemy faction. So Brent says, in a particularly troubled city, the Invisible Hand can be a friendly faction, a group of powerful individuals who work together to ensure that evil doesn't take over the city. They maintain an intimidating, secretive aura to dissuade others from investigating them, but they don't actually kill those who stumble on them. Instead, they charm those who meet them accidentally into forgetting the encounter. So that's a great option. You can have sort of vigilantes or a secret police force or whatever safeguarding a city, and when you meet them, after you meet them, you simply forget that you've met them. They may as well not exist. As a foe faction, the Invisible Hand is a straightforward enemy. You can use the legend of their two minions, literally. Perhaps they established it as a weird calling card to intimidate the populace, or change it up from one member to another. Now that's a detail I think that could be overlooked pretty easily, and that is that any kind of detail, little calling card or detail or part of the legend that you can sort of grab onto. And so the part of the legend as presented here of the factions, that all the members, when they're going to their meetings, they have two bodyguards. And it's great to be able to mess around with that, because if you say, okay, well, I've mentioned that now. It's been mentioned by a character. It's been mentioned in passing. But now every person that the reader or the player meets who has two companions, two standard companions, so who, you know, you see this one person, there's always those two other people with them. Wait a minute, are they part of the Invisible Hand? Or is it just coincidence? Because it's not totally unusual to have two regular companions. You might have a personal assistant and a legal counsel. You might have a bodyguard and a secretary. It could happen. Anyone can, you know, any important individual might have, or just an unimportant individual, a normal person on the street, might just have two friends who happen to pal around with them frequently. So it's beautiful. There's such flexibility there to mess with the onlooker's head. So that's the Invisible Hand. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. But I do like all of the things that it evokes around that kind of classic trope of the Illuminati or a secret society. I mean, it is very much that. And I think for a lot of the factions, that's not the common way of doing it. Factions kind of the way that they appear, at least in Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder and all those other things, they're meant to be things that you know exist, because that's the way that players can hook into those and inherit goals and motivation for their characters. So the mystery around such a faction may at first at least make it a very not very realistic faction to utilize in the story, but I think it's a fantastic device to potentially use around the story. The next faction I want to talk about is the Black Blade faction, or the Black Blades, plural, I think is what it's called. And this one is inspired again by a subclass in Xanathar's Guide to Everything, which is a book, a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, well, not a campaign setting, it's a Dungeons and Dragons supplement put out by Wizards of the Coast. You can purchase it in bookstores and places. So the Hexblade subclass for the Warlock came out in Xanathar's Guide. Now, it also was released in the Unearthed Arcana releases from Wizards of the Coast some months before. It's gone through some changes, but the idea is, I don't have Xanathar's Guide, so I'm just looking at the Unearthed Arcana. But the idea is that this the Hexblade is a warlock who has made a pact with a powerful sentient magic weapon carved from the stuff of the Shadowfell. These weapons grow stronger as they consume the life essence of their victims. The strongest of them can use their ties to the Shadowfell to offer power to mortals who serve them. So, in other words, the idea of the Hexblade is that you are a warlock, and warlocks have patrons. And if you're a Hexblade warlock, then your patron, your master, is a sentient sword. And since you're a warlock, and it's a magical sword, you gain all kinds of interesting benefits from this. This is from the Unearthed Arcana, so it could have changed by now, but the general flavor of it, for instance, starting at first level, you gain the ability to place a baleful curse on an enemy. As a bonus action, choose one creature you can see within 30 feet. The target is cursed for 1 minute. While the curse lasts, you gain a bonus to damage rolls against the cursed target. The bonus equals your proficiency bonus. Any attack roll you make against the cursed target during this curse is a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20, rather than just 20. And if the cursed target dies, you regain hit points equal to your warlock level plus your charisma modifier. So that's a pretty cool ability, and I think that one really sums up the spirit of this subclass. You're a spellcaster, but the source of all your powers come from your patron, and the patron is this sentient sword. So it combines the spell slinging feel with the hack and slash feel, which is quite satisfying for a lot of players, I think. And it's the inspiration, the Hexblade is the inspiration for this Black Blade faction. And Brent poses the supposition, what if instead of each member wielding a unique blade, they're all compelled by one central intelligent weapon that enhances their own? If a weapon can have a will of its own strong enough to influence one wielder, why not an even more powerful weapon that can affect a whole group? So the Black Blades are a relentlessly efficient group of mercenaries and smugglers operating out of a major port city. Nobody's quite sure how many people are in the gang, at least half a dozen, maybe up to 20. They're a motley bunch who wear dark clothes and have one curious harmony. Each carries a blade with a dark gray or black blade. When they spill blood, these blades glow brightly with mystic power, a feature that brings the band no insignificant measure of trouble, since it's hard to slip unnoticed past a guard when one's weapon is shining like a torch. The group is led by Artemis Giles, an intense, charismatic man in his mid-40s. He wields a massive blade, Foe Cleaver. Artemis's background is a little bit unclear from Brent's one sentence on it, and I gather that either Artemis went up against an opposing gang leader with Foe Cleaver and sort of won power there in the city with Foe Cleaver, or Artemis is an ex-soldier and had gone to literal battle, like a battlefield, with a Foe Cleaver, and that's kind of where they earned all of their power and all of their, I guess, their reputation and experience. So I'm not really sure what the intent was there, and it doesn't really. I think that flexibility is really nice, actually, for the leader of the Black Blades to either be just a sort of a street savvy gang member, or someone who's come from the battlefield doing, who knows, maybe heroics, or maybe some questionable things that maybe go a little bit farther than just defending your territory and sort of encroach on that uncomfortable sort of war crime kind of territory. So the faction, as a Foe faction, unbeknownst to most, Foe Cleaver actually runs the Black Blades. So Foe Cleaver is the Hexblade. It is the sentient weapon. It's a sentient weapon that desires blood, and in its centuries of slumber, it dreamed of clever ways to get what it wants. Instead of simply pushing its wielder to slay the nearest living creature, Foe Cleaver cleverly encourages its wielder to form a band of ne'er-do-wells, figuring they're not only very likely to draw blood, but if its wielder dies in a city, in the city, then the sword will be in somebody else's hand much faster than if the owner dies out on a battlefield somewhere. So this tactic has worked for years. In fact, this is the fourth gang Foe Cleaver has run, each one more successful than the last. This new gang grew so prosperous by smuggler standards that its power began to rub off on other blades in the gang. Within a few years, the gang will be full of Foe Cleavers just as intelligent and just as thirsty for blood. So that there's a lot there. So I'll quickly talk about the friendly side, the friendly version of this, and then get back to what we're implying here. So as a friendly faction, Foe Cleaver runs the Black Blades, but it doesn't thirst for blood, it desires justice. The soldiers of the city paint the Black Blades as ruthless sellswords, but they actually take down slaving operations, smuggling rings, and needlessly embargoed goods that are being held, from the common people by greedy merchant guilds, or they escort important innocent people out of war-torn regions, and so on. So they're kind of a vigilante group, but almost. Kind of, the way I see that is like the Three Musketeers when the Three Musketeers were being persecuted by Richelieu. So pre-taking down Richelieu and but still doing all the good work that the Three Musketeers are famous for. So sort of a Robin Hood type of character, I guess. I don't know if that's any different than a vigilante in your eyes, but I think of vigilantes more like Batman, whereas I think of other things more like Robin Hood, and those two to me are not the same thing. But anyway, doesn't matter. You get the idea. That's the friendly faction. So I think the big idea here, really, aside from the faction, which is a great one, but I mean the real selling point here is this idea that a sword can influence more than just the warlock who got bound to the sword. Now, Brent doesn't say specifically that the Black Blades, that the sword is bound to a warlock. So I'm not sure if the intent here is that Artemis, for instance, the leader of the Black Blades, is a warlock with a patron Foe Cleaver, or if the intent was just to riff off of the idea of a warlock and a hexblade, the subclass of the hexblade, and just say, hey, what if there was a sword that could influence just anybody who picks it up? Which I don't think that's a terribly original idea. So, I mean, I think that it's that's quite possibly the intent as well. I mean, it's just as likely. So I love the idea, and I love the idea that the sword might be able to influence a number of people, because, I mean, all of this stuff, all of the sentient swords and the influence of an item over a person, for me, from my background growing up reading mostly Tolkien, I kind of feel, I mean, I'm super attracted to this idea. I really like the idea that this magical item could start to influence its bearer or its wielder, and to make that spread to other people in frequent contact with this person, not even necessarily the item, but the person bearing it, is really cool. And then for that to even go into their weapons is even cooler. How far do you want to take that? Do you want to say that, okay, well, there's these 12 black blades who are assisting their leader, and all of their swords are becoming sentient? Or are those swords just bound to that one sword? Can those swords not turn against that one sword? That would be useful in itself, frankly. If you were Artemis, the leader of the Black Blades, having 12 scoundrels around you, maybe you would want a little bit of protection such that they, you know, if they tried to raise their sword against you to take your folk lever, then that would not work. The sword would just not would refuse to operate or whatever. So there's a whole bunch of ideas just in this one kernel, this one little notion of here's this super powerful sword that's influencing people. And I think for me it probably works best with as being a subtle influence. That said, in a game it would probably work even better if it was not so subtle, because probably sometimes subtlety is an enemy. And maybe it would be more exciting such that the players entered the room and had to roll a will save to make sure that they to ensure that they're not going to just turn on their friends and attack them immediately. Who knows? You'd have to think it through. But the idea of the sword having an influence is cool. And as a foe faction, it could be a really powerful force to have to take down. As a friendly faction, it's a noble cause. It's great. The sword that wants justice, that can't resist dealing justice, that's pretty cool. And even there, you could take it a little bit farther and say, well, it's going to deal justice with this iron fist that just cannot even be reasoned with, and maybe that's a problem. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just super just and empowers its group, its gang, I guess it's still a gang, to pursue justice. Nothing wrong with that. And that kind of thing is exactly, I think, why factions do exist as playable things, because it gives those players who maybe aren't super invested in the world, in a story sense, that gives them a purpose. That gives them a place to call home, a faction to call family, and a cause to fight for. So those are the two factions that I wanted to talk about: Invisible Hand and Black Blades. Really inspiring stuff. Go to geekarchaeology.com/blog for a lot more of this sort of thing. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as Not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.